Guru Nanak was sent to the school to just have some education, and the teacher began to teach him one joke. The procedure for this, wait, stop, wait. What do you mean by one? A child of 4 or 5 years old. And he said, this one means there is one God. You see, his conscience. Then he said, what is he? And all this creation has come out of him. He is eternal. He is the maker of all creation. He is the ruling power. He has got no equal, no enmity in anybody, no fear of anybody. He surely has an existence. And he has come half about his own self. None is the maker of him. Then the teacher asked him, what is this? How can we hand? Can we? With the grace of the Master. That's the gift of the Master. How can we have it? What does it one stand for? He said, I do not mean by saying one. I mean this one stand for something else which is expressed as one. He is neither one nor two. He is something which can be experienced. We can go into him, absorb into him, the experience of which can be given by a Master. And he can give us a realization of that one, for which one stands for. And how? He said, burn away all attachments outside, burn away all attachments, and make it a ink. And with your conscious self, go on writing the praises of God. As long as we are attached all outside, we cannot know ourselves. And when we know ourselves with our conscious self, we can see Him what He is. Kabir was asked, if I say He is one, then the question of two arises. That equal to calling Him names. God is not either one or two. He is something expressed by these words. So, He is in Himself something which can be realized, not expressed in words. Guru Arjan gives a reason for that. Why we tell Him one? He says, because we are finite. Oh God, You are infinite. As we are finite, we only to measure from our finite scale. So Absolute God cannot be seen by anybody, and nobody has seen so far. Absolute God, nameless God, worldless God, did not come into expression. That power which came into expression, that is called world, that is called now. The outer expression of which is light and sound. And that light can be seen, that voice can be heard. That is why Bible says, thy world is a lamp unto my feet, and, light on my path. So, every man, you see, about Naam, it's also same sad thing. You come in contact with Naam, you see light compared to thousands of suns rising together. So you'll find what? Then God, every man has a secret chamber within himself, what is called the closet of the body within that, which is higher than the mind and heart both, and provides mind with the understanding to a certain extent, and the heart with feelings of love. This chamber is the kingdom of God within us. This is the crest jewel, the pearl of great price. The saints, when we come in contact with them, they open this chamber by withdrawing our attention from all outside. The test of a true master is the fact that in his company this marvelous realm opens up within us. And the light, divine light, which is expression of God, which is expression of power, is seen. And the Christ said, if your eye is single, thy whole body shall be full of light. Muhammad, Prophet Muhammad said, the light of Allah is found where? In the human temples. So I am quoting why this right understanding was given by saints, masters, coming from time to time. Krishna said, Lord Krishna said, I will give you divine light and you will see my glory with it. Buddha said the same thing. Every man possesses the bright mirror of illumination. This is all the Buddhists realized. Buddha further proclaimed that the way of the illumined ones is the growth of snowdrops behind the eyes. And when Christ came, it was as if a few crocuses opened their hearts to the winter sky. But now the time has come when we can have a rebirth, which Christ spoke of when he said, the meek shall inherit the kingdom of God. So springtime is upon us now. There shall be more flowering saints, I would say now, to come up to give us, with the grace of God, a contact with the God into speaking power. So this is the revelation, spiritual revelation, which is coming up. All awakenings all around. So this is to be now brought. Why all these people? Okay. These things were told in the past, in the ears of the others, after a long time of testing. Now it is given out from the open platforms. People are having it without distinctions. Even those who are ready or not ready, at least they have got something. So this is what is needed. The times have changed now. So Master come from time to time to bring up these things into the experience of others who are born as man, because in man body only we can know God and no other. So absolute God, you know, is called wordless or nameless. When it came to, he wanted to be many, he manifested. And the manifestation, naturally, there are vibration, and vibration results in two things, light and sound. So Guru Nanak was asked, with what eyes do you see? He said, those eyes are different than these eyes of flesh and bones. So outward expression, this also you see, if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. Shivnetra, third eye, latent eye, dipti kyu, chashme batan, Pashim Plaso say, that is open. They open that thing into the beyond. This is the, what is one function of the master. We confound him with the teachers of the world. We do respect to them all, at whose feet we have learned something. But this is something where all philosophies end, where your contact with the physical body, your outward system are satisfied. The outward expression of God is light and sound. We can see Him with the single eye, a divya ishu, a shivnetra, or the third eye. Samastha Brahmins were asked, what about God? Because they don't believe unless you see God, you see. This also Master says, so don't believe in the words of the Master. If you, unless you testify yourself, there is something. You must have something to start with, maybe little or more. That depends on each man's background. But you must have something to say. A man comes up to give you a very wonderful talk on the business principles. That is very informative. But the poor fellow to whom that talk is given, they have got no money to start with, then. So all teachers also promise you go on doing this, you'll have also some time, you must be prepared, you must be ready. Or you'll get it at the time of death, rest assured, your life is insured. But don't believe that. A bird in hand is better than the two in the bush. Give your all and you will have everything. No, not that. You must have seen. He does not want anything from you. He says, I have come to give. This is God's gift. Have it free. Do you have to pay for sunlight? Air? Say, why not for that gift of God which is God? Why should you? I will pay it. So that's the first thing, you see. Master come to give, not to take. They stand on their own legs. And Shamasavde told them, Bibhayan, you should be able to see with your eyes. Bibhayan, Sare Mashuddhi, up look the beloved within you with your own eyes, with your God within you. And you must be able to hear His voice through your own inner ears. Now the question comes, how to open that eye with which you can be seen? He says, when you close your eyes, there's darkness. Then look penetrating into it, put in whole attention to it. That is knocking the door, you see, and it can be opened. You continue to look directly that there, you'll find light. Who will see that light? Your very self. So, you find, Tulsi says the same thing. Shabbatabhya says the thing, all say the things. Sit down in meditation, nothing comes up for years and years and years. Tulsi says, how to penetrate this darkness, you'll find that. Sit at the feet of somebody. When you put in, he gives you boost, you see light. Is it not wonderful? Is it not less than miracle? What more miracle is required? So, you see, unless man rises above life of senses, inner way is not open. Okay? It is you have to see. That is why I said, know thyself, O man, know thyself. Who you are, what you are. We are what? Conscious entities. We have got attention. Attention is diverted from all outside and concentrated to one's own self. There you see the light. Very simple, very common sense point of view is being put before you. He says, as long as, why do we not see Him? Because there are ramifications of the mind. Ripples are going on in the subconscious reservoir of our mind. Until that, those ripples are stand still, you cannot see Him. It is something, take a pond covered in weeds. You take out weed little by little every day, all weed is weeded out, you can see in the water and see your face. And this weed, what is that? This is your body. The body is the beginning of all, what you say, delusion. We are having the body, we are working at the level of the body. Body is changing. Every minute of life, being made of matter. All the world around us is changing, being made of matter. At the same speed at which our body is changing, as we are identified with it, this is an optical illusion that appears to be stationary. How to come out of that? This is the demonstration of which is Jnana Mahimasa. As you are identified with the mind, outgoing faculties, and the intellect, and you have reference, have recourse to the methods, to the practices, which are concerned with those things, how can you rise above them? So, rise above body consciousness, this is it. Given out by all masters. Learn to die so that you may begin to live. Be reborn. Be twice born. To withdraw your attention from all outside and from the body below, come to the seat of the soul in the body. This is called meditation. So meditation is the way back to God, which can be had only in man body, no other man body. So man is considered to be the highest in all creation, next to God. All gods and goddesses hanker to have the man body, because in man body alone we can know God. So Kabir says, oh man, why you boast you are the highest in man if you have not known God? Your greatest lies in effect only that you can see God. If you have not seen it, not, how can you? It is not a matter of only speaking, you see. Giving long, tall talks. So naturally, prayer arises from when our own efforts fail, where all human efforts fail, there the prayer succeeds. We make prayer to whom? A weak man prays to a strong man. Oh God, we are helpless, we are stuck fast in this business of the man body, how can you come out? It's all locked on all sides. Oh God, send us some man who can take us out of the box of the man body. This is Mara Rumpel's place. This is what Swami and all others say. Guru Nanak says, how to invert these outcomes? Somebody asked Guru Amar Das, how can you say, invert your outcome faculty? He says, sit down and see. These are technically expressed, sit down and see how the outgoing faculties are inverted. Then what happens? He says, when your attention is withdrawn from outside, you are practically, body is dead, you got no feeling in the body. When you rise above that physical level, you see the life form. This is what you can do yourself, welcome you are. I go to the masters, about whom you speak so much, go and ask them. If they get you, well, in Karnataka, you can do yourself, well, and live, what more is wanted? That is why I started that revolution is required in spiritual revolution, not at the level of body, but at the level of evil propensities which are taking you away from God. This is now springtime has come up, the times, high times. Times have changed. Old times. So that how this third eye, a single eye is open, so to have a vision of God. First thing required is the Guruvari Master. Who has seen? Who sees? Who can make a see? Guru words means when you close your eyes in darkness, that removes the black darkness and light explodes out. Such a one is the elementary what you say, criterion of a master. Not that, oh, go ahead, you are not ready, you must ready this and that. Old days that were done like that. Now times have changed. Who can sit at the feet of the master for years? They give you something to start with, now to maintain it. Take it that the light which is within you is not darkness. So first thing required is a guru. Master, what a guru? World makes thyself called guru. God is manifested in him, in the man body, he called him a guru. We respect him. Bulb is there is light. The powerhouse is working there. That light can work only through the bulb, which is not fused. We respect the bulb also, when that is fused, then another bulb is put on. That light is the God power. That is called the Master power. That is called, what you say, Christ power. That never dies, goes on working from pole to pole to guide the child humanity, way back to God. This is one thing required. Gita says, if you want to see God, go to somebody who has seen God. Who has not seen God, then how can they make you see? Now you find what is meant by a master or a guru, as compared with the other teachers of the world for whom we have worked. Respect for the teacher, something of the outer world. How great respectful and gratefulness should be to such a man who gives you this. So it happened with the, our master. You see, there were Christian missionaries there, out of place of Vyas. They once also to say, well, look, you're telling who is greater, the Christ or your Guru? Very politely replied, look, here I have seen my Guru, not seen Christ with you. Make him appear to ask me, I will distinguish between the two. So if bodies leave, that power does not descend, that goes on. The food for the hungry, in water for the thirsty. Demand and supply is the law of nature. The child which was born 1,000 years back, 100 years back, 20 years back or now, God makes arrangement of milk in the mother before birth. Don't you think that will continue further? So this is law of nature, you see. God's law works out. This is one thing required. And second thing, it's true life. Ethical life is stepping stone to spirituality. Truth is above all, and true living is above truth. When they come, masters come to the world, they say, see, so many social bodies are there. People say there are one or two or three. When Guru Nanak came, it was two times, two only. Indian Muhammad is where? Paramount. And Guru Nanak came us and said, I'm neither a Hindu nor a Mohammedan. Who you are? What you bear the label of Hindu? Yes, it is so, but I am not this own label given to me. I am a man, body based. My body is made of 5 elements. That power which enlivens this man's body, that I am. Now the times have changed, there are more than 700 social bodies in the world. So master, don't touch the outer bodies. Don't touch the outer label. They simply see they are man. They are in soul bodies. Have the same essence as that of God. And the same controlling power keeping in the body. So man body is the highest in our creation. So for that, for which is required good living. True living. Tree living, you saw? See what it means? To be truthful, don't deceive yourself. God is within you. He watches your every action. He even watches the very trend of mind you are going. We can't conceal with others. Darkness, deeds of darkness are committed in the dark, mind that. If anything requires seclusion, must there is something wrong. Anything what you do, and you, when you are asked, you have to tell lie. Consider that is the thing. There are two criteria. All of what you test them by these two criteria. So, be truthful. God resides in every heart. We are also brothers and sisters in God, the absolution of all consciousness. No high, no low, and the same power controls our Indubhasi, whom we worship. We don't have any hatred because you are a man of position, because you are a learned man, because you are a very rich man. All are equal. Some is standing on the table, the other is sitting in the chair. That is due to the re-elections of the past karma. Then comes chastity of thought that defiles your whole body. You can't expect God to manifest in a body which is full of filth. Then comes violence, non-violence, violence in word, deed and thought. So all this filth comes through the mind which defiles the man body. God, blessed are they who are blessed. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. You can't expect God to manifest in a filthy room. He is there already, he won't manifest. If the bulb is there, light within is good. All the spot is the black spots. Can you see any light? So this is what is required. True living. And the third one is saints, you know, they take you, give you the direct inner way back to God. They don't touch your outer ritual form, label, way of living, outer. They allow you to remain in your own social body. There are so many others, more than 700. He's not going to make another new form. Our master was once asked, but some people who wanted to start a new religion. He says there are so many wells already they are dug up. Why should I dig up a new well? What is out is there? The basic teaching of all masters is the same. Why not take this? So he did not form any new religion. Not there any possibility to have anything new. Already so many are there. So they do not have recourse to what? To form new things. They come to maintain, they come to fulfill, not this time. They love all. When they come, they are not the monopoly of any sect or religion, not monopoly of the East or the West. They come for all the world over. Just like sun rises, gives light to all the world over. They come for all the world. Their teachings are very simple, to the point. And most easy is most natural as compared with all other ways of yoga. So they give you not to follow this ritual or that ritual or this one or that form or this level or that level. They simply give you a lift from the body, raises you above the physical body, opens the inner sight to see the light of God. That is the capital they give you the very first. After all, we have to leave the body. This gives you a demonstration of how to leave the body. If you work day to day regular practice, what you will find? When you time of your leaving the body, you are jolly, you go smiling, because you know to leave the body every day. All glory and beauty lies within you. So they don't give you the outer ways of living as rituals, as customs of the various social parties, because they are not going to form any new religion. They come only bring you religion of God, religion of love.
Good morning, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you just heard was the last half of the evening talk given by Master at the Galt Ocean Mile Hotel in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, on December 7th, 1972. It was named The Coming Spiritual Revolution. Our reader this morning is Eileen Pokorny.
Good morning, everyone. We will be reading from The Wheel of Life this morning, and starting on page 4, where we left off in October. As a code of moral conduct, the law of karma makes valuable contributions to man's material and moral well-being on earth and paves the way to a better life in the future. In all the four spheres of human life, secular, material, or economic, religious, and spiritual, as denoted by the terms kama, fulfillment of one's desires, artha, economic and material well-being, dharma, moral and religious basis, upholding and supporting the universe, and moksha, salvation, deeds, or karmas, play a vital part. It is, of course, the moral purity that figures as a motivating force for attaining success in one's endeavors. In order that the karmas bear the desired fruit, it is necessary that they be performed with single-minded and purposeful attention and loving devotion. Besides these, there is yet another form of karma, to wit, nishkama karma, that is, karma performed without any attachment to or desire for the fruit thereof. This is superior to all the other forms of karma, which more or less are the source of bondage. Yet this type helps a little to liberate one from the karmic bondage, but not from karmic effect. It may, however, be noted that karma, per se, has no binding effect whatsoever. It is only karma, born of desire, or kama, that leads to bondage. This is why Moses taught, desire not, and Buddha and the 10th guru of the Sikhs, Guru Gobind Singh, time and again lay emphasis on the need for desirelessness. Karma, thus, is at once the means and the end of all human endeavors. It is through karmas that one conquers karmas and transcends karmas. Any attempt to overstep the law of karma is as futile as stepping over one's shadow. The highest of all is to be ne-karma, or karma rehat, that is to say, doing karma in accordance with the divine plan, as a conscious co-worker with the power of God. This is being actionless in action, like a still point in the ever-revolving wheel of life. Again, the term karma may be distinguished from the word karam. Karma is a Sanskrit term meaning action or deed, including mental vibrations and words of mouth. Why, karam is a Persian word meaning kindness, mercy, compassion, or grace. Now, as to the nature of karma, according to the Jain philosophy, karma is of the nature of matter, both physical and psychical, one relating to the other as cause and effect. Matter in the subtle and psychical form pervades the entire cosmos. It penetrates the soul because of its interplay with the matter without. In this way, a jiva builds for itself a nest, as does a bird, and gets fettered by what is called karma sura, or the subtle body, and remains bound therein till the inferior self is depersonalized and becomes a pure soul, irradiant with its native luminosity. The karmic shell enclosed in the soul consists of 8 prakutis corresponding to the 8 types of karmic atoms, producing different types of effects. These are of 2 types: karmas that obscure the correct vision, as for instance, hindering right perception or apprehension in general; those which obscure right understanding or comprehension; those which obscure the inherent blissful nature of the soul, and thus bringing about pleasurable or painful feelings; and karmas which obscure right belief, right faith, and right conduct. All these karmas work as smoke-colored glasses through which we see the world and all that is of the world. Life has poetically been described as a dome of many colored glass that stains the white radiance of eternity. And number 2, there are karmas which go to make a person what he is, for they determine bodily physique, age and longevity, social status, and spiritual makeup. In addition, there are divisions and subdivisions under these, running into hundreds of ramifications. The karmic particles spreading in space are willy-nilly attracted by each soul according to the presence of the activity indulged in. This constant influx of karma can be checked by freeing the self of all types of activities of the body, mind, and senses, and stabilizing it at its own center. While the accumulated karmas may be curtailed by fasting and the like, that is to say, austerities, reading of scriptural texts, detachment, repentance, and meditation, etc., Buddha, too, laid great stress on constant endeavor and struggle, with a view to ultimate victory over the law of karma. The present may be determined by the past. The future is our own, depending on the directive will of each individual. Time is one endless continuity. Past irresistibly leads to the present, and the present to the future, as one may like it to be. Karma seeks to affect only with the attainment of the highest condition of the mind, which is beyond both good and evil. With the realization of this ideal, all struggle comes to an end. For then, whatever the liberated one does, he does without attachment. The ever-rotating wheel of life gets its momentum from the karmic energy, and when that energy itself is exhausted, the giant wheel of life comes to a standstill, for then one reaches to the intersection of time and the timeless, a point which is always in action and yet still at the core. Karma provides a key to the life processes, and one's consciousness travels from stage to stage until one becomes a really awakened being, or Buddha, the enlightened one, or the seer of holy light. To Buddha, the universe, far from a mere mechanism, was a body pulsating with life principle, serving at once at his main support. In brief, The law of karma is nature's stubborn and inexorable law from which there is no escape and to which there is no exception. As you sow, so shall you reap. It's an ancient truth. It is the general rule for earth life. It also extends to some of the upper psycho-spiritual regions, according to the order of density and peculiarity of each. Karma is a supreme principle, superior both to gods and men, for the former too, sooner or later, come also under its sway. The various gods and goddesses in different realms of nature take a much longer time to serve in their respective heavenly spheres than human beings. But all the same, they have ultimately to reincarnate in flesh before they can aspire to and win final emancipation from the karmic rounds of births. All works, acts, or deeds form a vital device in the divine plan to keep the entire universe in perfect running order. No one can remain without some kind of work, mental or physical activity, even for a single moment. One is always thinking or doing one thing or another. One cannot by nature be mentally vacant or idle, nor can one stop the senses from their automatic functioning. The eyes cannot but see, and the ears but hear. And the worst is that one cannot undo what is once done. Repentance, though good in itself, cannot cure the past. Whatever one thinks, speaks, or acts, good or bad, leaves a deep impression upon the mind, and these accumulate impressions to go to make or mar an individual. As a man thinks, so he becomes. It is from the abundance of the mind that the tongue speaketh. Every action has a reaction, for that is nature's law of cause and effect. One has therefore to bear the fruit of his actions, sweet or bitter, as the case may be, whether one may like it or not. Is there no remedy then? Is a man a mere plaything of fate or destiny who works his way in a purely predetermined order? There are two sides of the matter. One has, to a certain extent, a free will, wherewith one, if he so chooses, can direct his course and make or mar his future, and to a great extent even mold the living present to his own advantage. Armed with the living soul in him of the same essence as his creator, he is more than karma. The infinite in him can help him to transcend the limitations of the finite. The freedom to act and the karmic bondage are but two aspects of the real in him. It is only the mechanical and the material part in him that is the subject to karmic restraint, while the real and vital spirit in him transcends all, and it is hardly affected by the karmic load, if established in his native Godhead. How to get established in one's real swoop, the Atman? This is what we have perforce to learn if we aspire for a way out of the karmic web. The trouble with most of us is that we don't give a thought of our actions. We, at every step, heedlessly go on collecting the load of karmic particles without realizing that there is a power within that keeps account of all we think, say, or do. Thomas Carlyle, a famous thinker, says, "Fool, thinkest thou, that because no Boswell is there to note thy jargon, it therefore dies and is buried. Nothing dies, nothing can die. The idlest word thou speakest is a seed cast into time, which brings fruit to all eternity." Similarly, the father of Greek drama in the pre-Christian era tells us, "Deep in the nether sky, death rules the ways of man with a stern and strong control, and there is none who can, by any force or act, eludes death's watchful eye or his recording heart." And that is the end of chapter 1 from The Wheel of Life, and we will continue with chapter 2. Karmas have been classified by saints into three distinct categories: Sanchit, or the gathered and stored karmas, going far back into incarnations, running into the unknown past; Prolabdha, luck, fate, or destiny, or that portion out of the Sanchit storehouse which constitutes a person's living presence, which none can escape, however one may wish and try; Kriyaman, the karmas which one is free to perform as a free agent in his present earthly span or existence, and thereby make or mar his future. The first one, Sanchit, the stored deeds. Good or bad deeds that stand to a man's credit as earned in all previous existences, in order of creation, counting from the day of first appearance of life on earth. Man knows nothing about them, or of their extent and their potential power. King Dryasha, who was blind, when endowed by Lord Krishna with his yogic power, was able to trace the cause of blindness to an act done in the unknown past, extending back to over 100 incarnations or embodiments. In chapter 25 of the book of Exodus, Moses, while giving the Ten Commandments of God, speaks of God as having commanded, "I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation." Even in medical science today affirms the significant part that heredity plays and traces the origin of certain diseases coming down and appearing in the succeeded generations. So does modern psychology connect problematic behaviors in certain individuals with mental peculiarities in their parents and ancestors. The second, Prolabdha. These are just that part of the Sanchit karmas which constitute a person's fate, destiny, or luck, which determines one's present existence on earth. A person has no control over them. The effect of these, good or ill, has to be tolerated as best one may, with smiles or with tears. The present life is just an unfoldment or revelation of the predestined karmas with which one comes fully loaded into the world. It is, however, possible that one may so mold and develop their inner self through the guidance of some master soul that he may not feel their bitter sting, just as a kernel in a ripe almond or walnut does not feel the prick of a needle by getting detached from the shell without, which as a consequence gets shriveled and hardened and serves henceforth as a protecting armor. In this way, each one of us, willingly or unwillingly, wittingly or unwittingly, is forging chains for himself, no matter whether the same be of gold or of iron. Still, chains are chains, and they are equally efficacious in their application, to wit, to keep a person in perpetual bondage. Like a poor silkworm imprisoned in its own cocoon, or like a spider caught in its own web, or a bird in its nest, one remains bound in hoops of steel of its own making, with no way of escape therefrom. Thus the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth is ceaselessly set in motion. It is only when one transcends the body consciousness and becomes nekarma, that is actionless, inaction, like the still point at the center of an ever-revolving wheel of life, that a stop is put in motion of the giant wheel of karmas. For then one becomes a conscious co-worker of the divine plan. This is why Buddha, the prince among ascetics, emphatically said, "Be yet desireless, for desires are the root cause of human suffering, as they motivate actions right from the subtle vibrations in the subconscious to the mental thinking in the conscious, leading to the vast and limitless harvest of variegated deeds of different hues and forms springing from the imbalance of the mind. The mind, sitting in the chariot of the body, is thus driven blindly and headlong into the fields of sensual pleasures by the five powerful steeds of the senses. Uncontrolled by the power-intoxicated charioteer of the mind, helplessly imbalanced as it is, with the reins of intellect dangling loosely about him. Self-discipline, then, is of prime importance, and chastity in thought, word, and deed is the essential requisite that helps a person on the path of self-knowledge and God-knowledge, for ethical life is a stepping stone to spirituality. The third is kriyaman. It is the current account of one's willful actions and deeds in the present existence. This type of karma is quite distinct from the other two. In spite of the limitations imposed by prarabdha, or unchangeable destiny, each one is gifted with a free will, and it is free to sow what seeds he may. Endowed with the gift of discriminative faculty peculiar to his constitution alone, he can judge for himself what is right and what is wrong, and as such it would be vainly presumptuous on his part if he were to expect a bed of roses when he sows thorns and thistles. It is up to him to make or mar his future as he may. A master soul can give him a correct lead by putting before him the true values of life. Life, which is more than the bodily raiment and all that is connected therewith, the sense-dominated existence. Under his guidance, one develops an easy detachment from the world and the worldly affairs, and once the magic spell is broken, the blinkers fall off, and the stark reality stares him squarely in the face, providing him with an opportunity to escape unscathed. Ordinarily, however, some of these karmas bear fruit in his very life, while others, the unfructified ones, are transferred to the general count of Sanskrit karmas, which go on accumulating from age to age. Thus, it is given to each one to think ahead of time, and to weigh well the consequences of acts and deeds intended before taking an irretrievable step, a leap into the dark, and a headlong plunge in a fit of impetuosity which is regretted forever and cannot be undone by blaming the stars for their supposed malignant influence. A railway engineer, for instance, is to plan beforehand the track, for once the lines are laid, the train is to run on blindly. A little error in laying the lines, a loose fish plate or a wrong angle, may lead to a calamitous result. Even when everything is done properly, one has to keep a constant and strict watch, day and night, lest anything get out of joint or the track is otherwise tampered with by hostile elements. According to nature's law, a man, the embodied or incarnate soul, is like a precious jewel closed in three caskets or bodies: the physical, the astral or mental, and the causal or seed body, all of which more or less partake of the terrestrial character with varying degrees of density. In Corinthians, they say, there are also celestial bodies and bodies terrestrial, but the glory of the celestial is one, and the glory of the terrestrial is another. These are like outer robes of coat, vest under it, and then shirt. When a man casts off the physical body, his spirit still is wearing the astral and the mental body. He has also the causal or the ethereal seed body, or thin veil, under the astral realm. Under one is able to cast off the physical body, he cannot reach the first heaven, the astral kingdom within. And a reading from the Corinthians. Now this I say, brethren, the flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. Neither doth corruption inherit incorruption. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? This casting off or change may occur either through the final dissolution, the disintegrating process commonly known as death, or to be brought about by the method of voluntarily withdrawal of the sensory currents from the body, technically known as rising above body consciousness, by a process of inversion and self-analysis. The Gospels refer to this withdrawal as to be born anew, or resurrection. The Hindu scriptures speak of it as twice born. It is the birth of the spirit as distinct from that of the water, the latter from seed corruptible, as distinguished from the former, seed uncorruptible, unchangeable, and abiding of the spirit. The Muslim dervishes, mystics, call this death in life as death before death. One can learn how to withdraw, not only from one's physical body, but from the other two bodies, the astral and the causal as well, through the kindly assistance of a master saint who has himself transcended into the beyond and can help others do likewise. Well, I will stop the reading. We were reading from The Wheel of Life. We started in the first chapter, from page 4, and we stopped in the second chapter on page 14. Thank you, Master, for this wonderful satsang.
And thank you for reading for us, Eileen. There were 80 people at this morning's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So we have to decide what we want at heart of ours. Are we here only for the worldly things? Are we here only for the name and fame of the world? Are we here only to have things of the other world or heaven? Are we really after only emancipation from birth and death? A real lover wants none of them, you see. He wants God, and God alone.